Man, I never have enough time to eat my protein bar. Get at me, dog. We'll get back to your calls in a little bit. That is the name of the song, right, Connor? Get at me, dog. Yeah, just making sure. Give me a sec while I finish my... Marco went too quick there. I need to finish my protein bar and have some water. Then we'll get to the NBA with JBT. Oh, this is embarrassing. So, a couple years ago, and we've had Jonathan Von Tobel on since then, but a couple years ago, we had JBT on, who is a senior NBA betting analyst for VSiN Live, hosts as well, does a bunch of stuff with the NBA. We had, and JBT, I'm sure you remember this, we had you on to preview the 2020 postseason, and I took offense and was bothered that you picked the Hawks to beat my Knicks. Meanwhile, you absolutely nailed that series, saying that the numbers were saying that the Knicks, their luck would run out. They weren't good defensively against the three, all that stuff. So I was like, you know what? I got to have JVT on. The Knicks are back in the postseason ahead of this series, and I want to go around the league with you as well. So, but you remember that when you picked the Hawks over the Knicks a couple years ago?
I do. I do, actually. I remember every win. You don't remember every loss. You remember every win. No, I've got a good memory. So I remember coming on for you guys. And that was a little bit later at night, too, for me. I think I stayed up till like 1 or 2 in the morning to do that hit with you.
Yes, very much so. I mean, that's why it was nice to have you on at a decent hour tonight. And I appreciate you taking the time as we're doing the evenings here as opposed to the overnight. All right, well, educate me, JBT, because I'm into the Knicks, as you know. But around the league, and I know we just saw the Bulls win their play-in game, so they are in. But I want you to give us some insight here as to what's going on around the league. We'll go through quickly if we can, or as quickly as we can here over each series. Do you think any of these play-in teams could do any damage against the top two seeds in each conference? Let's start with that while we're in the middle of these play-in games.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually going to go back later tonight and tomorrow morning and rewatch some of the Hawks-Celtics series in the regular season. But I can't help but think that when you say do damage, like I think the Hawks can win maybe a game or two against Boston. They finally put everything together against Miami, right? They're a team that should be better than their record. They have the personnel. They have the talent. They have Trae Young. They have DeJounte Murray. They've got a bunch of big-bodied wings. They have depth in the front court. We saw yesterday the Onyeka Okongwu swallowing Bam Adebayo whole when he met him at the rim for one of those blocks. Like, there's a lot of talent on this Hawks roster. And I think one of the big differences, too, is you're starting to kind of see the fingerprints of Quinn Snyder with this team. You know, one of the big deals yesterday was they kept running, like, multiple flip screens for Trae Young so he would actually get some space there so he could get to the middle of the floor, so he could get to his floater. He had his best game, I would argue, right, as a Hawk against Miami. They'd played 13 times in the last year, and that was the best performance he had against them. So, like, I don't know if they're going to upset Boston, but when you're looking at, like, Hawks plus 2.5 games at a plus price, right, things like that, I think those are worth looking at, right, in terms of at least a play-in team that could do some damage. And then the other side is, of course, the Lakers, right? Like, the front court injuries for the Memphis Grizzlies are immense. When you have Brandon Clark and Steven Adams not available, now all of a sudden the onus is on Jaren Jackson Jr. to stay on the floor and defend at a really high level. And I think he can do one of those two things, right? He can defend at a really high level. He's probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year for a reason, but he's got a foul problem. He averages 3.4 personal fouls per game. In the series against the Lakers in the regular season, he averaged 5 per game. So if he can't stay on the floor, well, now all of a sudden you're talking about a really small front court for the Memphis Grizzlies taking on LeBron James and Anthony Davis and what they have there. I definitely think the Lakers could do some damage there. So I think I'd look at the 2-7 seeds as the most likely candidate to potentially do some of that damage that you're referring to against the top two seeds.
I want to ask you a couple questions about some individuals before we get back to the series and the postseason matchups. Trae Young, is it realistic to think he might be traded? And if so, what would be realistic to where it could be a landing spot for Trae Young?
I feel like no, right? Like it's a little bit more extreme. I think there's probably a little bit more heat with Trae Young than there is with Luka Doncic, and they're always going to be tied at the hip. But Young, of course, has gone through a couple of coaches and is kind of getting a little bit of a reputation there for Atlanta. But but he is a very good player and he has superstar potential. So I think if you're a team like Atlanta, you're doing as much as possible to kind of hang on to him. And as I mentioned, like, you've got a pretty solid core that you're working with. You need to tweak. You need to make it a little bit better. So I would say it's really unlikely that Atlanta moves on Trae Young. I'd be very surprised if they do. They'll They'll move on from Nate McMillan's son, who he was screaming at on the sideline yesterday, quicker than they'll move on from Trae Young, for sure.
And how about, you know, I'm watching this play-in game now with the Thunder and the Pelicans. Yeah. I mean, dude, Zion. I mean, what's this guy's issue? He's never healthy. Here are the Pelicans trying to battle for a postseason spot. And again, Zion's not available. I mean, is this what Zion is? Or can we ever expect to see him play and be healthy consistently?
You hope that he can be healthy and be consistent. I mean, when he's on the court, he's great. And that press conference he had the other day was really weird during shoot-around. I don't know how much you watched of it, where he was referring to himself as a third person. And I think like the big takeaway was, as he kind of talked about there, it seems like he doesn't want to really test the hamstring, like he's nervous. You know, he talked about not feeling like he could do the same actions on the hamstring that he believes. And until he believes that he could do it, then he's not going to be out there. So, look, maybe the Pelicans just don't make it into the tournament, and he eventually just heals over the offseason. He comes back next year. He's going to be perfectly fine, and we never talk about this. But, you know, Ben Simmons is getting thrown around the name because it is somewhat similar, right? As far as we know, and the way that Zion spoke the other day, he's actually healthy, like physically healthy. It's just whether or not, to use his own words, he feels like Zion. So whatever that means is kind of odd to come out and talk about. So we'll see. Look, mental health is an important thing, and if the guy's not mentally there, then you want him to be mentally there. And if he feels like he can't use the hamstring to the best of his ability and he feels like he's going to aggravate it again like he did a couple of months ago, then you'd rather he be healthy. But it is odd that he would come out, or the team would let him come out, right, and say, oh, I'm healthy, I'm just not ready, because that paints this picture, and you're going to ask questions about what's going on with him. So I would say, look, let's give it one more offseason. Let's see what he comes out like last and next year and see what happens, or if he comes back in the postseason. But we are, I think, getting into that territory where it's starting to ask questions about, okay, like, what's going to happen here with him? Because it's starting to go down the path of Ben Simmons, and that's not one that you really want, because he was a third-string center at the end of the year for Brooklyn and ultimately got shut down.
Yeah, that is not one guy that you want to have your name being linked with at all right now, with the way that it's gone for Ben Simmons. All right, now I know you said the seven seeds are the one to watch here. Hear me out, because I'm a big law of averages guy. Thunder win tonight, beat the Pelicans, send them home. Thunder beat the T-Wolves, Nuggets, Thunder. Because when I think of 1 versus 8, and I know it was different with the 5-game series, but JVT, you know where I'm going with this. I think of 1 versus 8. I think of Dikembe Mutombo holding that ball on the floor, knocking off Sean Kemp and the Sonics at the time. Thunder were born from the Sonics. Can we get a little Thunder beating the Nuggets in a possible 8-1 matchup for a little revenge years later?
So how about this? I'll kind of go along your path, and I'll give you some numbers that I think would help that case, right? The Denver Nuggets come into this postseason, they are 23rd in defensive efficiency when it comes to guarding in transition. They give up 129.8 points per 100 plays in transition, according to Cleaning the Glass, and off of live rebounds. So when teams are just ripping rebounds and running against them, they're 28th. Their defensive rating is 126.6. Well, you know who loves to run? The Oklahoma City Thunder. They love to run, and they run a lot. Mm. And I would say that, to your point about maybe sparking an upset here, or at least pushing Denver, as much as an 8 seed, or as much as we've seen an 8 seed recently, we'll put it that way, the Thunder actually have the ability to, I think, do it. Like, one of the things and one of the angles that I took down the home stretch here of the NBA season was betting against Denver whenever they were taking on teams that like to get out in transition. And there were some really ugly matchups for them, right? The Memphis Grizzlies game, where they went to Memphis, got absolutely smoked by the Grizzlies. That couple comes to recent mind. So I would say I don't think the Thunder are completely dead. I think that's a team that would really bother Denver quite a bit. So, you know, calling for the outright upset, I kind of hope. I've got $10 on a 500-to-1 ticket on the Oklahoma City Thunder to win the NBA Finals, so I'd be down with it if they can move on to that ground. But I think that it's not impossible, obviously, and I do think they have the archetype, the Thunder, if they pull this off and get into the 8th seed, that they would be able to bother Denver quite a bit.
I love it. Now I have something to root for, JVT. We're talking with Jonathan Von Tobel, host, senior NBA betting analyst for VSiN. I'm big into nostalgia. I was much bigger into the NBA back then when the Knicks were actually good in the 90s. And then who could forget that upset with Mutombo and the Nuggets upsetting the then Sonics? I think that would be a fun first-round matchup in an otherwise boring, right, 1-8. So are your thoughts on Denver, are they not... And I know you're a big Clippers guy. Is Denver not a legit number one seed in the Western Conference? You don't look at them seriously? Or are we just saying that that might be a bad matchup with the Thunder?
Yeah, no, I think it's just a bad matchup with the Thunder. But I also just think, like, this Western Conference as a whole is just pretty wide open, right? So it's nothing against Denver specifically. I mean, look at that Memphis Lakers series that we talked about. Grizzlies are only like $1.30, $1.40 favorite as a 2 seed against a 7. It kind of speaks to what the Western Conference looks like at this point right now. And the 4 seed is actually the favorite to come out of the conference. So it's just kind of a topsy-turvy year for the West. And all of these teams are flawed, but Denver is flawed too. You know, they're 17th in overall defensive efficiency. When Aaron Gordon's not on the floor, their defensive numbers plummet even farther without him out there being able to help them defensively. There's not a lot of high-level on-ball defenders for this team. They give up 117.9 points per 100 possessions without Gordon. That's in the 26th percentile of lineups. Like, that's not very good. So I think just like with Denver and all of these other teams in the West, like, I think they're all just flawed, and I think that's Denver. I wouldn't put, hey, Denver's not a true 1 seed. They are a true 1 seed in the sense that the West has been kind of down this year, and they won that 1 seed. But I think them, just like every other team beneath them, has a clear flaw that you could point to that can be exposed and ultimately lead to their downfall.
All right, so we've kind of covered Denver and the 1-8 matchup, whatever that may be, and the Grizzlies and Lakers. We touched on that a little bit, although I may add, well, one on the Lakers. Do you think the Lakers could go on a run here?
I think they can go on a run, and then I think they can beat Memphis. And then I think that they run up against it in the second round. One of the things that really bothers me, and you kind of saw it with them in that game against Minnesota, is they're very reliant on getting to the free throw line. They make the third most free throws every 100 shot attempts. But outside of that, they're a very middling half-court offense. Over this span, since they revamped their roster, they're 23rd in half-court offensive efficiency. They don't shoot the ball particularly well. You saw that against Minnesota, too. And they don't shoot it very often. So that's not very good, right? To be pretty average in terms of your shooting, and you don't take that many shots, it just leads to some pretty disjointed offensive nights. And you kind of saw that against the Timberwolves. So, well, I think they just match up really well with Memphis, and I think they can win that series. I think once you're talking about moving on and winning multiple series, whether it be against Denver in the next round or, let's say, a potential Western Conference Finals against whoever it may be, I think that's a little bit of a tough matchup for the Los Angeles Lakers. So I would say they got life to move on, but they're definitely not one of the top four teams I would pick to win the Western Conference.
All right, two of the more intriguing matchups in the NBA's first round. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm fascinated, JVT, with the Kings. I mean, what an atmosphere. Even when the Knicks went in there in the regular season, it was an incredible atmosphere. I read somewhere their tickets are going for, I think, $500 to get in. They have been tremendous, and they take on the Warriors in a first-round matchup. What do you think here? Kings have been the better team in a regular season, but is this one of those spots where, you know, the veteran Warriors put it together in the postseason?
Man, I think the market, so look, I think the Warriors deserve to be favored, but I think the market's got this wrong in favoring them to the degree in which they have them favored. To have them as minus 290 favorites, you know, for your audience, that's an implied probability of nearly 75%. So you're saying that a team that went 11-30 straight up, 13-28 against the spread away from home this season, has a 75% chance of winning a series in which they have to win at least one road game. Like, that's just, it's a really tough ask at that type of number. So, I think the Kings are going to be very competitive, because one of the things that held Golden State back this year, it's not just like the road, right? Like, they didn't go on the road and run into a bunch of loud crowds and think like, wow, this is tough, and lost a bunch of road games. They were the third worst road defense in the NBA this year. Only the Spurs and the Rockets were worse defensively on the road than the Golden State Warriors. That's not just changing when you go to take on the best offensive team in the NBA in their own building, and one that, as you mentioned, is going to be extremely charged after a 16-year drought. So I think ultimately the Warriors are going to move on from this series, but I think it's going to be a lot tighter than the market would indicate. You can get like the Sacramento Kings if you want to get them at plus 1.5 or 2.5 games at reasonable prices. Bet the series to go over 5.5 games at about minus 160 or so. That's going to be, I think, a pretty good wager there too. I took a small piece of the Kings to win it outright. I don't think you can just shake 41 games of a sample size that say that this team's going to struggle defensively on the road and just be like, ah, it's the Warriors, they're going to be fine. Like, there's something to that. That's a big enough sample size to tell us that there are some issues with this team defensively that are going to consist.
Plus, I think people are disrespecting the Kings. JVT, I got to be honest with you, I had no idea that was the price. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, the Kings are legit, and that place is going to be an impossible place to play. I know they're young and inexperienced, but, man, they have been good. I would jump all over them for that price. Who knows how it's going to play out? And I get it, the Warriors, you know, the veteran team with all those guys, but, man, for that price, I think I'm with you there. I would lean toward placing some money on the Kings. And how about the Suns and your Clippers, JVT? What do you think of this matchup here?
So this is another one, again, where I think the market's just a little high, and you're starting to see some pushback on this, right? So the Suns opened up as high as minus 600. You've seen a little bit of a dip in that price. We're down to minus 550. And look, I understand anybody who thinks Phoenix is awesome, right? The numbers have been great. Durant with Devin Booker, those lineups are plus 18.4 per 100 possessions. They have an offensive rating of 124.7 when they share the floor. They've been fantastic. Their new starting lineup has a plus 15.5 net rating. Like, everything's really good when you look at some of those numbers. However, we're still talking about literally 547 possessions together, so it's an extremely small sample size, or eight games, as we know. There are eight opponents. Three of them didn't make the play-in round. Three others are play-in teams, and two of them, Denver, both times, didn't start Jokic in either game, and one of them they rested everybody. So it's a small sample size of data, and it's a sample size of data against some really lesser competition. So I think the market's just kind of overflating the sense of how good the Suns can be. They are a good team, and I don't want to sell that short. And I also think the market has not really paid attention to the Clippers kind of figuring things out post-Paul George. You know, Russell Westbrook and Kawhi Leonard on the floor together since they kind of reconstructed everything without Paul George. We're talking about those lineups with a plus 8 net rating or somewhere around there. Like, they've been really, really good, plus 8.7 specifically with Westbrook and Leonard on the floor. And that has been since they removed Marcus Morris from the rotation. He's not really playing for him anymore. So the Clippers are starting to figure things out. Terrence Mann and those bench units, they actually have a plus 5 net rating when they're on the floor together without Kawhi Leonard. So, like, the Clippers are slowly kind of starting to tweak things and doing things right, and they're getting used to playing without Paul George. And at some point, you could get Paul George back, which gives you two massive wing players. They're going to be able to switch a bunch of stuff defensively. They're going to have a size advantage along the perimeter against Phoenix and some of those smaller guards. And they have a little bit of a deeper bench. So, like, I put a little bet on the Clippers to win the series outright. But for me, the bigger bet was Clippers plus 2.5 games at minus 125. So essentially saying they're not going to get swept, they're not going to lose in five, and this series is going to go six or more games. And I think there's a lot of value in that number because I think the market's a little too high on the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by both those series, the Kings and Warriors and the Suns and Clippers. Those are my two. I get the Lakers and Grizzlies, but, man, those series, the 3-6 and the 4-5, should be fun to watch in the Western Conference. We're talking with Jonathan Von Tobel. He's a host, senior NBA betting analyst for VSiN Live, so check that out. At me, JVT, on Twitter. Let's go to the Eastern Conference, JVT. I mean, is it even worth discussing the Bucks, or do we just expect to see them in the Eastern Conference Finals at the very least?
Yeah, I think we're kind of expecting that, right? Like, they should have no problem with whoever their 8 seed is going to be after Miami and Chicago play each other tomorrow, or facing me on Friday. And then going on from there, whether it be Cleveland or whether it be New York, I think they match up well with either of those two teams, and they should be able to move on in about six games or so and await whoever's going to come out of what you would expect to be quite the brawl between Boston and Philadelphia. So I nothing is impossible, so we'll put it in pencil, but I have a very firm grasp on the pencil putting Milwaukee into the Eastern Conference Finals.
I'll save the Knicks and Cavs for last because that is the one I'm most intrigued by. How about the Sixers and Nets? I mean, you said it's going to be Celtics and Sixers, and I understand why. Is there any chance that either of those two teams get upset? You mentioned the Hawks a little bit have a chance. Is it more likely for the Hawks to beat the Celtics or the Nets to beat the Sixers in your mind?
Oh, I think even though the series price would say that it's technically Brooklyn, I think it is the Hawks. It just because, like, when you look at Brooklyn, like, they first off, who's going to guard Joel Embiid? Because Nick Claxton's awesome. He had a good defensive year. The kid gives up 65 pounds to Joel Embiid. Like, there's no, like, from a physical standpoint, that's just such a mismatch for Claxton to handle. And you go back and you watch, they played each other back on February 11th, and this was when the roster was kind of new, and so there's not, like, a lot to go off there. But when you watch that game, you go back, like, they were sending doubles at Joel Embiid as often as they possibly could because there's nobody really to match up with them physically. And so if you're coming from there, I mean, if you're going to double Embiid, that means more space for Tyrese Maxey and James Harden to really operate. And they're really, of course, great off of the dribble can create. Like, I just think there's so many different mismatch opportunities for the 76ers to take advantage of. I find it really, really hard to believe that they're going to get upset here by the Brooklyn Nets. Now, I think there's a universe in which it happens, and what happens is Brooklyn, who has taken over 40% of their attempts from three with this new roster, that just kind of gets insanely hot over the course of a best of seven and kind of bombs them out. But I think that's really unlikely to take place over the course of an entire series. Could happen for one or two games, but I don't think that's going to manifest itself for an entire best of seven series. So I think it's really unlikely that the Nets would be able to pull that off. I'd still pick the Hawks as the more likely upset, albeit small in their own probability, to beat the Celtics.
And what about Celtics, Sixers? Who's got the better chance to knock off the Bucks?
Man, you know, I've got a future ticket on the 76ers from way back in, like, you know, end of November. So I really do believe in the 76ers team. And I think from an actual matchup standpoint, I think they match up better with Milwaukee than the Celtics do. Mm. You know, I think they've got enough size to handle. I think they can throw some pieces at Giannis Antetokounmpo to help defend him. And I think they really don't have a massive matchup for Joel Embiid outside of Brooke Lopez. So I think there's some things there for the 76ers to take advantage of. But I'll say this, man, the Philly's going to have their hands full with Boston. Like, as we know, they were 0-3 before they barely got that win over the Celtics right before the end of the regular season. And that was one where I think was Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, one of the two actually didn't play in the game, and Robert Williams didn't either. So it was a shorthanded Celtics team. They needed everything to beat. I think they're going to have a tough time with Boston. So we know that the favorite is going to be, at least for an Eastern Conference Finals matchup, Milwaukee and Boston. But if Joel Embiid has like a monster postseason in him, he's good enough to carry a team through multiple rounds. So I wouldn't be surprised, but I've got it in pencil that it's going to be Boston and Milwaukee.
All right, JVT, now for the main event. And before we get to the Knicks Cavs, I noticed your Twitter avatar is a picture of IQ. You care to explain why Emmanuel Quickly is featured on your page, being the Clippers fan you are?
So about 2 months ago, so obviously Emmanuel Quickly is up for potentially winning Sixth Man of the Year. And I was very actually adamant that, hey, man, look, like if you look at his first 30 games, he was only averaging 9 points a game and under 40% shooting from the floor. I don't really think that's a strong enough resume for him to realistically win this award. But then, Sal, I was going through my MGM account and I had forgotten that back in October, I bet Emmanuel Quickly to win Sixth Man of the Year, 35-1. So I immediately changed my tune, and I was like, ah, Quickly can totally win this thing. He's the guy. So it's a little bit of a facetious joke. I do hope he wins it because I found that ticket, but I'm being a little bit of a smartass.
That's fantastic. You make it so you got so many tickets, you forget what you have. How could you forget you have IQ?
It's a long season, man. Yeah. When you bet stuff in October, you're going through, and trust me, you know, for anybody out there listening, there's also a couple losers. I had to scroll by a Bones Highland Sixth Man of the Year ticket to get to a man you were quickly, so there's a couple in there. But, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to find it.
All right, so here we go. I'm very curious to see what you think here. The Knicks have only won one playoff series, one first-round series, in the last, like, 20-plus years, really since the 2000-2001 season when they ousted in the first round against the Raptors. That was during, you know, that was the end of the heydays for this franchise. It's been a few since, I think this is the sixth postseason appearance since that year. And like I said, just the one postseason win. Do the Knicks have a legitimate shot at another postseason series win?
I think they do, and especially if Julius Randle is going to be available to start, right? It does seem that it might be trending in that direction. So you officially want him out there, of course, to have this opportunity. But look, I think so. I went back and watched all four of these regular season matchups, and like there's a lot to like about what the New York Knicks can bring to the table here in this matchup. Like, if you're talking about their ability to present, I think they have, what, six guys on this roster that have averaged double-digit points for them compared to, what, four for the Cleveland Cavaliers. They have a much deeper bench. You know, we talk about Emmanuel Quickly. Those lineups with Emmanuel Quickly and Josh Hart have been out of this world when they're both on the floor without Brunson or Randle. They outscore their opponents by 10.8 points per 100 possessions. The bench outscored the Cavs bench in all four games that they played in the regular season. And then you just talk about the little intricate matchups, right? Like when they played in New York, Randle was playing so well in the first half that Cleveland had to put Jarrett Allen on him instead of Evan Mobley. Well, that worked because Jericho Sims started the game and Mitchell Robinson wasn't available. Well, you can't do that now if Randle's going to be out there because Robinson's going to eat Evan Mobley on the offensive glass alive. Like, I think there's so many little things that they can do pretty well. And the other part is Isaac Okoro healthy for Cleveland? Because he missed the last five games of the season, and he's their best perimeter defender who's going to take on Jalen Brunson. And if he's not available, well, that's Lamar Stevens. And Lamar Stevens is a fine defensive player, but he shoots 28% from three. Like, he's no threat. So the Knicks can play off of him. They can help off of him anytime they're on that side of the floor. I think there's a lot to like about the Knicks' chances here. So, again, I think it relies on Randle being available. But I think for sure, like, the bet that I made here was Knicks plus 1.5 games in the series at minus 130. I think they're going to be able to be very competitive in this series. I think they have a chance to win it, too. Again, the caveat being that Randle's healthy and available at the start. But I'm kind of surprised at not only the market, but the media just kind of going, all right, let's chalk this up for when Cleveland's going to move on. I get Mitchell's been playing well, but I think the Knicks can do quite a bit to bother Cleveland.
When you look at the Knicks, JVT, what do you think that they're missing to get to the next level. They've had the development now. I don't know what you felt about Brunson, but I didn't expect him to be this good. He's turned into a star. Randall returned to his all-star form. I know people knock R.J. Barrett for not taking that next step, and he's not a good shooter, but they have IQ, who's developed. They have Quentin Grimes. Mitchell Robinson, who you've mentioned, Hart has been a great addition for this team. What do you look at with this Knicks team saying they're missing this to get to the next level?
I mean, I would think it's two things. I think one is, I think Tibbs has got to talk to somebody about implementing a little bit of a better offensive system. Like, they tend to get super ISO heavy, right? They finished last in the regular season in assist rate. And you see it from time to time, and at least like some volatile results, right? So when Julius Randle and Jalen Brunson are playing really well, this offense can look great. But when they're not, all of a sudden everything kind of sticks up and the offense looks really disjointed. They don't move the ball particularly well. And so it leads to some really down performances offensively. So kind of revamping this offense to at least implement a system that moves the ball around a little bit more, that shares it, it gets more catch and shoot opportunities, I think would be really good for them. And I just think, look, while Julius Randle's a really good player and Jalen Brunson's a really good player, I think they're just still missing that like really dynamic wing piece that can create. I mean, you need a really good wing player to really succeed and thrive in the NBA. You could argue that Randle is kind of that, but he's not particularly that. And a guy who could just get from the wing, go north, south, score at all three levels, and do it with some effectiveness while being a connector. I think that's kind of what they're missing. That would be at the top of the list. But like you said, man, like Brunson's come over. He has been freaking awesome. He's been that guard that they've been waiting for a really long time. And what the cool thing is, tying us back to the postseason, he just went toe-to-toe with Donovan Mitchell in the postseason a year ago, and he was clearly the better guard and the better player. He's got some confidence coming in, but I think those two things would be at the top of the list for me.
You trust Randle, assuming he's healthy, you trust him to get the job done in the postseason? Because last time we saw him, and I know you said, I believe you were saying that the Knicks, you know, they were shooting, or they weren't defending the three as well as everybody made it out to be when they were playing the Hawks in that first-round series a couple years ago, and that came to fruition. They couldn't stop him. But the Knicks also couldn't score. I know they're a little bit better at that now with the different players that they have, but Randle is still their all-star. Do you trust that Randle could get the job done in the postseason when he failed back in 2020, his last appearance in the postseason?
I think he can, and I think it's because that Brunson's there, right? Because now all of a sudden, if the shots aren't falling, like that year, Randle was their guy, right? Like he was the dude that was their number one alpha guy who led them there to that point, had one most improved player that year because he was incredible at every area. You know, we kind of realized too, like the shooting was a little fluky that year too, at least in the rate that the three-point shots were going down. But now all of a sudden this year, while he's still their lead player, if the shots aren't falling, you can acquiesce to Jalen Brunson, who can really score on his own, who could take advantage of some pretty poor backcourt defenders in Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. So I would say, yeah, like because the onus is not as much on his shoulders as it was that year they made it and lost to the Atlanta Hawks, I think that makes your job easier if you're a star like Julius Randle. So I would say sure.
Thank you, JVT. We appreciate your time, man. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the postseason. And good luck with all those wagers that you got. We hope you cash some of those tickets.
Appreciate it, man. Always good to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, at me, JVT, on Twitter. Jonathan Von Tobel, host, senior NBA betting analyst at VSiN Live. Make sure you check it out. I love talking NBA with him. You could hear, I mean, the info that he's got right there. So well-versed around the league and obviously with every single team. And he gives the Knicks a chance. I'll tell you two bets I'm definitely making after talking to him. I am betting the Kings to win their series, and I'm betting the Knicks. And I was going to bet the Knicks anyway, so I'm betting the Knicks. And I might even take a little flyer on the Thunder, assuming they get by tonight, because I do believe in that. Payback through organizations. The Thunder aren't the Sonics, but they come from the Sonics. Obviously, they moved from Seattle to OKC. Time for a little payback. Wouldn't that be fitting? 1-8 seed. And the Nuggets go down this time, like many years ago when it was the other way around. All right, we'll get back to your calls on the side. We got an hour and a half to go before we say goodnight at midnight. So it's me and you the rest of the way. 877-337-6666. We're talking replay or the controversial umpire decision that was made during the Yankee game this afternoon. That has been the main topic. We're talking Yankee baseball. Franchi Cordero getting the job done yet again. And just the Yanks in general. Anthony Volpe getting to an opportunity in the leadoff spot and making the most of it right out of the gate. But the Yanks with an impressive comeback win. They win four straight series to start the year. Are you concerned about the lack of depth in the starting rotation, or do you think the Yankees will be just fine? And the Mets getting a big series win. I thought it was an important early season series for the Mets to kind of just stabilize things They did that, taking two of three from the team that eliminated them last year, one of the best teams in the National League, the Padres. It was the Mets pitching that did the job, but their big bats got the job done as well, as now they'll look forward to the off day tomorrow. They head out west to start a long road trip with the A's, the Dodgers, and the Giants. 877-337-6666. Of course, the NBA postseason as well. Knicks, Nets, and we get all three local hockey teams in. The Islanders clinch their playoff spot tonight. Who will they be playing? We'll find out probably after tomorrow when we find out what goes on with that Panthers game. But you got the Devils, Rangers, and Islanders all in. We are in. It is first time since 94 that you have all five winner teams in. The Knicks, Nets, Devils, Rangers, Islanders. This is the glory days of New York sports. It's 1994 all over again. And you know what the Ranger fans are thinking. 877-337-6666. Your call's on the other side. Sal Licata on the Fan. Sal Licata back on the Fan. 877-337-6666 is the number to call. Be with you till 12 a.m. You know who's up after me, Connor? Is it EJ? Okay, EJ Stewart will be here again. I know EJ was in for me yesterday on the overnight, so we'll be back again tonight at midnight. As we got Connor Green helping us out throughout the course of the night here, keeping an eye on the NBA play-in game just for fun. I have not been big into betting, especially since football season has been over here, but I have a hunch that I might dive in. And I got to be careful because I have a problem. I will admit, sometimes I can't control myself. I'm an emotional person, can you tell? But I do want to have some fun. I love betting the NBA series. Maybe I'll do some kind of pool as well. I don't know. I want to get into these series here, and you know, the Kings I thought would be a good price, JVT talked about, and just having some interest around the league anyway. Have some fun with that. Who knows? And definitely the Knicks. I mean, I have rooting interest in the Knicks anyway with the, you know, being a Knicks fan, but I do want to have I do want to back them up because I do think the Knicks are going to win this series, and if you can get them at a good price, why the heck not? 877-337-6666. Mark is on Long Island. What's up, Mark?
Hey, Sal, great to be on the show. Great show tonight, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I got a point. Oh, thank you so much. And I got a point earlier this evening. You've been talking about the replay, the Yankee game this afternoon, the first inning, and it seems like a lot of callers have a difference of opinion in what your opinion is. And I just want to say kind of what they're trying to say to point it out. The umpires, they're there not to get the call right. They're there to follow the rules. The most important, follow the rules. So the question is, what gave them the authority in the first inning to go back to the replay? The only way they're allowed to go to the replay is if Terry Francona, you know, got a challenge within 15 seconds. If he didn't post that challenge, what allowed them to do it? Why are they unilaterally allowed to step into the game and say, oh, we decide to go to the replay at this point? How are they allowed to do that?
Because they're the umpires. Now, look, I don't know this. I don't know the exact rule book on it, but they're the umpires, and they thought in that moment that the call being called correctly took precedent over some silly rule.
To a banana republic. You can't just make rules whenever they could.
They're the umpires.
Yes, but then if they're the umpires, they have to follow the rules.
Now look, maybe
they just go do what they want. Why don't they go check every single ball and strike to get it right? If the criteria is to get it right, why don't we, you know, look at every ball and strike?
They're going to. We're going that way.
Not here yet. We have to follow the rules as they are right now at this point. That's why Boone went out there today.
Nobody blamed Boone. I mean, I don't know what show you were listening to, Mark. I never blamed Boone once for going out there.
I know you didn't, but what you're not realizing is that the umpires did not have the authority to go look at that replay. That's why all the callers are furious. It's because the umpires unilaterally took it upon themselves to go review
to get
the call
right.
But who cares if they got the call right?
That's the only thing people care about. What don't you guys get? That's the only thing anybody should care about. Getting the call right. You're worried about some nuance in these rules. Who gives a crap about the stupid rules? You want to get the call right or you want to get the call wrong? I don't understand it. What gives them the authority? They're the umpires. Now, look, maybe Major League Baseball will send that umpiring crew a note and get them in trouble a little bit. Hey, you guys can't be doing this. And what my defense would be in that spot would be, hey, do you want us to get the call right or not? You let us know. We saw the replay. We thought we wanted to get the call right. It was better for the game to get that call right. You guys are worried about the wrong thing. You're focused on the wrong thing. I'm trying to help you, and you keep fighting with me. At the end of it, at the end of the day, the only thing that should matter in all the sports when it comes to the umpires or the referees or whatever it is to get the call on the field right. Well, I don't understand. How are we differing on this? You'd rather the umpires get the call wrong, because this is exactly what you're saying. You'd rather the umpires get the call wrong on the field, but stick to the ridiculous rule that you can't look at the big screen, can't be influenced by the crowd. By the way, maybe the umpires weren't influenced by the crowd. Maybe somebody realized they made a mistake. They all came together. They were talking it out like we see NFL officials do all the time. I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. I didn't talk to the umpires. I didn't hear what they said afterward. Heard Boone, heard Francona. I didn't hear from the umpires. I didn't hear from Major League Baseball. If there's an explanation for it, I'd love to see it. Maybe we get that tomorrow. But how could you not think that the bottom line, if you're rooting as a fan for a team in a game, don't you want the plays to be called right on the field? Or is it only because it inconvenienced the Yankee fans? I mean, I guess Yankee fans would know about the calls not being right because let's go back to Jeffrey Mayer to name one of the billion calls that they've gotten breaks from. Maybe you guys don't want to get the calls right on the field. I would think, though, for the betterment of sport, we want to get the calls right on the field. By the way, I'm fine with no replay. Get it all out of here. And let's go with human element. I'm fine with that. That will level the playing field. But when you have replay and you clearly see the ball hitting the ground, what's the issue with the umpires actually coming together and getting the call on the field right? Well, you can't do that. You can't do that. It's 15 seconds. It's in the rule book right here. I understand what the rule is, but I also understand all that stuff is put in to get the call on the field right. That's why there's replay. Marcus calling from West Virginia. What's up, Marcus?
Hey, what's going on, Sal?
How are you, Marcus?
I'm doing great. But the Yankees got to get a left-handed threat in the batter's box. Cabrera's been huge. One of your guys calling in last night.
Cordero, Franchy Cordero's been huge, yeah. Oh, you talking about Oswaldo Cabrera?
No, I'm talking about Oswaldo. Yeah, Cordero has been huge, but Cabrera, he's key for us right now.
Well, Oswaldo Cabrera has been good, but Franchy Cordero has been a big power bat, left-handed bat for the Yankees.
Oh, are you kidding me? Another Cashman steal.
Right.
Just earning that money. And yeah, and I've been inundated with Baltimore fans my entire life. I live in the Panhandle of West Virginia, so everybody here is Orioles fans.
Orioles actually aren't bad. I mean, they had a good season last year. They're fun to watch.
I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
You know, if they could have kept some of their younger guys, they'd be in a lot better shape than they are right now. But Rutschman's a beast, and see that game, Mountcastle had?
No, I didn't. Look, the Orioles.
He had like 11 RBIs or something.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about that. Yeah, I read about that somewhere. I did not see it. The Orioles, they're at least entertaining for a team that's not expected to do much. They're entertaining. But anyway, forget about the Orioles. Yeah, I mean,
ownership's their issue. So, but no, I just think the Yankees got to have somebody that they can't just throw a right-hander at us. Every team throws their best two right-handers.
I don't think that that's the case anymore with the Yanks. I mean, you have Rizzo. And look, they were so right-handed heavy for so long.
Rizzo's had yet to impress me.
Well, what do you mean? He's been terrific. What do you like about Rizzo?
He's not a deep threat the way Cordero, like you said, Cordero's been huge, but
oh no, Anthony Rizzo, Marcus, has been terrific since becoming a Yankee. He's been a very good Yankee for him and a big power threat. Hey, look, Franchy Cordero, who knows how long this is going to take for him.
I mean, he's unproven.
Oswaldo Cabrera is a good player. I was talking about him, comparing him to Ben Zobus before the 2016 World Series MVP. I think Cabrera could be that type of player. He provides such an energy and a spark for this Yankee team. He could play everywhere. And when he's going well, he's fun to watch. So I think he's just got to get it done in the postseason and maybe with a little more seasoning.
But he's, like you said, he's unproven too. I'm saying we got to get somebody in there. I'm not dogging Rizzo. I just don't think he's too much of the offense flows through Judge. And as big as he is, we can't count on him to go out there 150 games. I mean, he's been huge.
Right.
I mean, last year was a put-up year. The Yankees made him put up, and he did.
All right, and he's continuing to do it
amazing,
again.
Yeah.
He's doing it again this year, and thanks for the call, Marcus. I don't think the Yankees' issue right now is a singular bat. I think the Yankees' issue is going to be, can they sustain the consistency with the offense through the postseason? Whether it's Judge, whether it's Rizzo, Stanton, Glaber, whoever. Franchi Cordero. I remember last year it was Matt Carpenter providing that spark. Now it's Franchi Cordero. We'll see, and it's very early on here. You don't want to overreact to a small sample size. But offense shouldn't be the Yankees' problem until the postseason. Then you want to see, and they have different guys, like Bader when he comes back healthy. Look, I think Bader, Glaber, Volpe, these are guys, Cabrera, these are guys who could potentially be guys who get the job done in the postseason because they should be a nice complement to the power that they have with Judge, Rizzo, Stanton. But we got to see them get it done. You know, the Yanks have been off to a nice start here, winning the first four series of the year, and they're still, you know, they're dealing with some significant injuries. Rodon, Bader, as we mentioned. Seve has been out. You know, Loaiza. And the Yanks have had, it's not like everything's gone their way, but yet they've managed to make the most of it. But as far as what's missing, hard to tell at this particular point. You could always upgrade. The Yankees could use another outfield bat, but you're looking at the name on the paper saying, ah, yeah, Franchi Cordero, they could replace that bat. But what type of production are you going to be able to get that's been better than what he's given you so far? The question is he going to be able to continue to give it? Lou is on Staten Island. What's up, Lou?
Hey, Sal. How's it going, brother?
How are you, Lou?
Oh, good. Thank you so much for taking the call. Actually, on my way home from the Islander game. Just wanted to know your opinion. Obviously, this is the first Islanders playoff berth since they've been in UBS Arena. The energy in the stadium was crazy tonight. One fact that a lot of people don't know is the Islanders have actually given up the third least amount of goals in all of the NHL. The last couple of times they've made the playoffs, they've obviously made deep runs, most notably recently against the Lightning where they took it to Game 7. Mm-hmm. Just want to know your thoughts. You think the Islanders are for real? You think they can make a deep playoff run even if they're matched up with a Boston, a Carolina? I personally think they can, almost even more so than the Rangers and the Devils, just thinking through a local lens. Sal, just want to know your thoughts.
Well, how,
again, thank you so much for taking the call.
Well, how would you, what are you basing that off of? Here's what I would give the Islanders a chance for. Sorokin. That's number one, because I think he could be the type of goalie that could win them a series.
Yep.
But you're going to be matched up with two powerhouses in either Carolina or Boston. So if it weren't, like, I think maybe the Islanders have a puncher's chance against Carolina. I can't imagine the Islanders knocking off the Bruins.
You know, Sal, it's a funny point, because me and my buddies who were at the game, we were talking about the same thing. One observation that I've made about the Bruins, though, is they have gone all out to try to break this record, which they did, of the amount of wins in a singular season, which, if I'm not mistaken, is about 63-64.
Yeah,
to 64, me, as an Islander fan, I love that as a matchup. You're going all out to try to break a regular season record. How many times has the President's Trophy winner gone on and won the Stanley Cup?
Agreed.
At least in my experience, it's typically the team that has nothing to lose, and I feel very good about the Islanders, but totally understood, Sal.
I know, I agree. I agree with what you're saying, Lou. I agree what you're saying 100%, and thank you for the call, and good luck to your Islanders. I said that coming into the postseason, which was, well, I was trying to make a case for the Rangers, thinking that, well, I would never pick the top team because the President's Trophy takes a lot out of you, especially to your point. I think it's an excellent point. Bruins going hard to try to make sure they get that record. They do finish with, well, not even finish, but they have 64 wins and 133 points with one more game to play. But even with that, hard for me to sit here. And look, sometimes sports are illogical. A lot of times, sports are illogical, which is why you just want to get in. If you're an Islander fan, you better be believing they can beat whoever they play. That's why you watch the games. That's why they play them. That's why you get into the series. Hard to logically sit here and realistically pick the Islanders to beat the Bruins. I think they could beat the Canes. I don't know if I could pick them to beat the Bruins, even though I agree with your point about Boston maybe being a little tired or just in general that how many times have we seen it where President's Trophy winners do not finish the job? Look, I'm just glad we got all three in. I'm rooting for Rangers, Rangers to beat the Devils. I want Rangers, Devils first round. I want the Rangers to beat them, obviously. And then I want Rangers, Islanders in that second round. That's, to me, that's the dream scenario. I don't care how we get there. That's what I want. And we'll find out, you know, who the Islanders matchup is going to be. Florida plays tomorrow against Carolina. So we should know, you know, where obviously Carolina and the Devils stand and where the Islanders and the Panthers stand. Right now, the Islanders have that seventh spot. But if Florida wins, then they move ahead of the Islanders, and it'll be the Islanders and the Bees. 877-337-6666. We'll continue with your calls for the final hour of the show coming up on the other side. Whatever it is you want to discuss on this Wednesday night, Sal Licata on the Fan.